I'd like to welcome everybody to the Mesa City Council study session for Thursday, October 16th, 2008. We're going to begin actually by moving into executive session, and then we'll come back probably within the hour to continue on with the agenda. So I'd entertain a motion to move into executive session.
So moved.
Moved by the Vice Mayor, seconded by Councilmember Richens. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? We are now moving into executive session. We will now reconvene the study session. I'd like to welcome everyone here. First item on the agenda this morning is to, after executive session, is to hear a presentation to discuss the development of MAFE's approving grounds. Okay. I think what we're going to do is give an update as to where we are in the MAFE's approving grounds, first of all, and then move ahead with I'm not sure we need an actual presentation this morning, but we're going to give an update as to where we are. There's obviously a lot of interest in that, and Mr. Rigby, are you looking for somebody to...
Mayor, would you like me to start with just the schedule?
Well, let me give a background as to why the schedule is probably going to be changing, okay? On October 6th, I believe, which was about 2 weeks ago, we introduced several ordinances related to zoning and annexation of the Mesa Proving Grounds and the project there. About a month ago, we introduced a notice of intent related to the development agreement and the benefit and incentive agreement related to the Gaylord Hotel. All those items are moving through the system concurrently and not so concurrently. Because there are several different pieces to this puzzle, and the development agreements have taken a little bit longer to complete because of the complexity of the deal and the fact there's a lot of different moving parts, and I think it was more complex than what we imagined. The items that we were going to hear and act upon next Monday, we are going to be delaying, and Ms. Spinner will give a new schedule on some of those things. And the reason for that is that we believe that in order for the public and everyone to have the opportunity to look at these agreements before council takes action, they need to have sufficient time. We could theoretically finish all these agreements and get them out in the next few days. We don't believe that would give the public enough time to truly look at those and review those and give comments on those before council was being asked to act on those. So what we're going to do is not act on these issues on the 20th. Those will be delayed back to the 3rd so we can consolidate everything that's coming together. And Ms. Spinner will give an update on that. Just so you know, the deal, the business deal and the incentive deal has not changed through the negotiations. We have been talking about technicalities, legalese, how to word things, how to implement things, and that's where the complexity came. So nothing has really changed from the substance of the deal that we announced several weeks ago. But we still want to give everybody adequate opportunity to fully review those agreements before the council was asked to take formal action. So we will be delaying those. There is one issue that has come up that I would like to talk to you about today, and that is that in early September, when we announced along with DMB and Gaylord plans to build the 1,200 to 1,500 room destination resort, which takes up between 100 and 200 acres on the Mesa Proving Ground site, we recognized what a significant deal this was. We recognized how important this would be to the city. We've been working diligently with all the parties the city has to create this framework that I've been talking about so that we can facilitate this billion-dollar investment. And remember, that's $1 billion in private investment, and we've been working through these agreements. We're committed to this property, we're committed to this project, we're committed to making it work, but we're going to do it in the right way. We're not just going to do it in the way that's the most convenient, that's the easiest. We're going to do it in a way that is right for this community and right for those who are making the billion-dollar investment. So that's been a difficult challenge. Because the project includes a convention center, and a convention center is something which is specifically mentioned in our charter, we believe that charter requires us to involve the citizens of Mesa in this decision. A project this important for our community requires certainty. And because of some questions that have been raised as to how the charter interacts, we need to remove that certainty. The only way we can provide this certainty is to bring it to a vote of the people. Therefore, today I'm announcing that I'll be placing on the agenda for our November 3rd council meeting, along with all the other things that we're going to act on this project, a request asking this council to call a special election for March of 2009 to bring this project to vote of the citizens of Mesa in compliance with Section 613 of the city charter. So we will go to a vote. The citizens of Mesa will have a chance to weigh in on this. This is something which is required by the city charter. It's something we fully support. It's something that both Gaylord and DMB also are in support of, and so we'll move forward. And I'm confident that the citizens of Mesa will support this project because it is something which is truly unique and truly significant for not only our city, but the East Valley, the metro area, the state of Arizona. So that's something that we will be acting on in addition to the agreements that we've already talked about. And I'll turn it over to Ms. Spinner if you want to go over the revised schedule of those other things.
Sure. Thank you, Mayor. We will be on Monday, as you said, Mayor, moving some of the items that's currently on this draft of the agenda that you're going to review today. And specifically items B, C, and E, we're going to continue to November 3rd. And they've already been introduced. They're not changing. We're just simply moving the date for council to take action on those items so that all of the proving ground items will come before council at one time, as the mayor said. Item 8D, we have, while we've been negotiating the agreements, we found a little, not glitch, but something that we wanted to clarify in the community plan ordinance. So we're going to reintroduce that ordinance on Monday night, on the 20th, so that we can clarify that issue. That will be up on your agenda for November 3rd for action, along with all of the other issues. On Monday also, this Monday, the 20th, you will see a notice of intent, and that is under Arizona law. You adopted it a few weeks ago with regard to this agreement, but the agreements have changed a little bit, again, as the mayor said. So to make sure everything's absolutely clear, we're going to again ask the council to adopt a new notice of intent with regard to the development agreements that will be coming before you on November 3rd. Attached to that notice of intent, our goal is to have the agreements themselves, the financial agreements. There will be the development agreement attached to the notice of intent, along with the leases and an IGA with regard to the CFD that may be established at a later time. This way, and we hope to disclose that tomorrow, so that it'll be available to the public tomorrow and will be acted upon by council, the notice of intent, on Monday. You will also see then some additional agreements will be disclosed next week. They are not included in the notice of intent, because the notice of intent is just based on a statutory requirement. But these agreements are some other development agreements that talk about the phasing of the development and the city services that will go along with it. They will be disclosed next week. We're still finalizing those documents. Then on November 3rd, you will see all of the issues related to the Proving Grounds project coming before you on the agenda. It will include findings of fact that we've talked about in the past, that those are required by the statute. It will also include the incentive development agreements, along with the leases and the CFD document. It will also include two entitlements development, which is we've been calling them. Those are the phasing of the development, and again, the city services will be on November 3rd, along with all of the zoning issues, the annexation ordinance, comparable zoning, the PCD ordinance. We also have introduced the lighting standards ordinance and a potable water resolution, and as the mayor just said, a resolution calling an election for March 9th, and this agreement will be placed on that ballot. So, Mayor, that's the timing of releasing all of the documents, as well as when they will be placed on the council agenda.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions, comments about that item? No. All righty, we'll move on to item number 3, which is to review the specific agenda for next Monday. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. Page 6. Councilmember Higgins.
Mayor, on 6 Indigo, the question is, it's relating to the agreement with Mesa Community College District and the Mesa Arts Center. Awesome. Good morning.
Good morning.
I just wondered if all the tuition, is there, in addition to tuition, do we get some other fee from the Mesa Community College District for using our facilities?
Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, that's correct.
Okay.
In this current IGA, we would receive monies from Mesa Community College for essentially facility use, rental of the space, equipment repair and replacement, that kind of thing.
Okay. Awesome. That was it. Thank you.
Cool.
We want to, I think this is just for this fall semester.
Mayor, it's actually an agreement for FY 08-09.
So for the entire year. Does
right.
that allow us, I mean, as we go into discussions, as we are going to go into with budgetary and things like that,
mm-hmm.
I noted in the past sometimes the agreements fixed us in where we had obligations regardless of where we were, and it was actually a situation where it became more expensive to cancel an agreement than it did to continue with the agreement. Does this allow us, or will it allow us, some flexibility between semesters? Understand that we have to go, there are certain natural breakpoints, but does this key us in for the entire year where that we cannot, if we just so decide to change things, however we want to change it?
Mayor, I would say it's an agreement to cover the full fiscal year, but it's at certain points, as you indicate, we expend money on, for example, printing the class schedule and putting that out, doing the marketing, expending dollars from the marketing budget on that kind of thing. But we really have the option to cancel classes virtually at the last minute if we need to, but we do have some of those expenses leading up to.
Are we fixed in as far as covering salaries and other things for instructors even if we cancel a class?
Mayor, for the Mesa Community College classes, yes, we do have fixed costs for instructors, but they're also covered to a lesser extent by our normal community education classes at the Art Center that
okay.
we do without.
And I don't want to get into the minute details of that. I just want to make sure as we go on to this budget area, we're going to have a lot of discussions on things and want to make sure we maintain a certain amount of flexibility so we're not locked into things that we later wish we wouldn't have been locked
Absolutely.
Into. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Sure.
Page 7. Page 8. Ms. Spinner.
Mayor, with regard to items 8B, 8C, and 8E, those will be continued to the November 3rd council meeting. Item 8D will be removed, and we're going to reintroduce a new ordinance.
Okay. Page 9, Councilmember Summers.
8H and 8I were items continued, and when I read the material, I understand that staff's recommending another continuance to November 2nd to investigate a special improvement district. Or the 3rd, excuse me. We don't know.
We can look into that and let you know, Councilmember Summers.
Okay. The issue was whether or not they met the fire requirement, and one issue was, they would have to install a fire hydrant. I think there are other options. Perhaps they can put in some sprinklers in a building that's in the back. Actually, we might have an answer.
Ms. Long.
I have a partial answer. The applicant is asking us to consider a special improvement district. There's some administrative issues with that, so we just simply couldn't resolve all of those issues. There is a fire hydrant involved. It's fairly expensive for one single residential lot to do that, so he's looking for some help from his neighbors. Whether or not we're going to be able to do that, I'm not sure, but it made sense to continue this so we could continue to have the discussion with him.
Okay.
Okay.
That'd be fine. I think the direction we'll head, if we can just leave this on for now, let's take it off the consent, and we may end up continuing this to a date certain when we once we get to that meeting.
Well,
or is it on there?
Yeah, it already is on.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't read that last line. That's my bad.
I did the same thing.
I read everything else but the last line. Wonderful.
Which is understandable because for you and I, it is in bold letters and darker.
It is so darker.
I can understand why we both missed it.
You know, somehow I got to continued from the August 18th meeting and figured
usually
you
miss the fine print. We missed the bold print.
We missed the bold print. Though.
Okay. Page 10. Okay. Item number four, hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on neighborhood stabilization program. And it looks like we have... somebody coming up. Mr. Ray?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Mr. Bia,
Carolyn, and Ms. Kent. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'll wait for you to start.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. We're here this morning to give you an update on our neighborhood stabilization program that we recently obtained or found out information of from HUD. And before I get started, what I'd like to do is kind of give you an overview of the problem that we have here in the city of Mesa with foreclosures. And as you can see on the side here, we put up a density map about the different the level of foreclosures that we have within our city, and as you can see, a majority of those are in the 85204 area, but we do have spot locations throughout the city. But this just kind of gives you an indication of the amount of foreclosures that we have in the area. And as far as foreclosures currently, this was a kind of a spot picture that we took towards the end of September, which kind of gives an indication about the severity of the problem with foreclosures. And at the time that we took this, this was about 2,300 properties within the city that were currently in foreclosure, some phase of foreclosure within the city. Yes. In the next slide, we're going to focus in just a little bit on the 85204 area. And what you see in that area, that we have up to 460 properties in the 85204 area that are currently in some phase of foreclosure within that area. And you can see by the density between Mesa Drive and more towards Val Vista, East Main, and down the baseline, how heavy it is, and especially concentrated in the area between Lindsay and Mesa Drive is really heavily concentrated as far as the foreclosures go. The other additional thing that we did in the next map, we kind of put together information on the density plus the code violations in the area and the Part 1 crimes that are in the area. And as you can see, there is a high level of activity within those areas that we feel is a correlation between the foreclosed property, which also leads to criminal activity that also leads to code violations in the area. So we feel that part of this program should be focused, a main focus in this area, just simply because of the high number of foreclosures that we have and the relationship between those foreclosures, the Part 1 crimes, and code compliance.
Councilmember Summers?
Is there also a correlation in the social economic status of the areas? Because there are also a fairly high number of foreclosures in, for example, the 85208 zip code. But in the, and just taking a snapshot look at where that coloring is, it looks like that area in there is some of the newer houses. So I'm curious as to whether the has to do with the social economic status as well. Is there a difference in the foreclosures in the areas in the 85204 as compared to 85208? Are we seeing different code violations, different numbers at lower levels of crime in 208 as compared to 204? Do we not have that data?
No, we did have that information, and we did have a level of crime in the area, but it's not as significant as it was in 85204.
Okay.
And with that, I'm going to go ahead and just kind of give, this is what the indication of the problem that we have in the area, and I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Carolyn, who's going to give you the presentation on the program in itself.
Thank you, Ray. Good morning, Mayor and Council. Just briefly on the history of the program, it came about through legislation, the Housing and Economic Recovery Act, and that produced $3.92 billion for the United States of this NSP money to come out. And like Ray said, NSP, as we'll be talking about, is the Neighborhood Stabilization Program. Mesa was allocated $9,659,665. And this was specifically, this program was specifically designed to focus in on areas of greatest need. And here in Mesa, we think this has a lot of potential to make a substantial difference in designated areas. Next. These funds will be treated a lot like our CDBG funding, so it will kind of mirror that with a few different changes. And it's considered a special allocation of our 08 funds. And the amount that we received, it came about because of a formulation that HUD had regarding foreclosures, subprime mortgages, and various other indicators. The local distribution, the target areas that we have come up with that Ray already explained to you, like he said, we looked at the greatest number of foreclosures, the greatest percentage of homes with subprime mortgages, significant rise in rate of foreclosures. We do have some figures on that. The code compliance violations as well as Part 1 crimes. So we did look at all those factors to come up with our areas. And like I said before, HUD has really recommended and has really come forward to say that we need to focus on areas of highest need. And that will make the most significant impact and make a difference on when we designate areas, and we have labeled that to be west of Lindsay Road with a priority given to 85204. Some of the stipulations that come with the NSP funds is that we have to have those funds obligated within 18 months. So we're under quite a tight time frame, and by allocated, they mean in 18 months, we have to know specific properties, we have to know the plan for those, and so we'll have to report to them. If we don't have our money obligated at that time, then it will go back. So the next slide indicates our tight time frame that we are under. And later this morning, we are having a meeting with our community partners. We've invited 32 of those, and it's open to the public. We've posted that on our website, tried to get it out to as many people that would like to be interested to hear about the program. And we will be handing out RFPs at that meeting for them to make application.
And your community partners specifically, how you define those?
We took the list. We have a large contact list of people who have utilized CDBG funds in the past and home funds and human service funds, all the funds that we typically, the partners that we work with, and we added several to that too, and, you know, anybody that had specific need, we
But these are nonprofit organizations and others who have worked with us in the
yes,
past.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mayor.
Councilmember Higgins?
Do we need to actually have all the RFPs in before the city writes the grant?
Yes, because it's kind of a roll-up, so they would, you know, whatever plan we come up with, we have to include in that what they want to do, and that's what we apply that's what we apply for, is based upon projects.
Carolyn, why don't you explain to the council that even though we've been allocated the 9.6, we don't get it unless we have to make an application for those dollars. So we can talk a little bit about what's going to be included in the application just generally, because that's the part the council is going to be asked to approve the program on November 6th. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Talk a little bit about it. Well, actually, talk about what happens on the 6th versus the 20th. You're right. I'm sorry, but it's just there
sixth
is
would be a study session.
The program has to be set by the 6th. Is that correct?
Right.
Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
We have a 15-day public comment period. They've lowered the public comment period down for this specific program because of the need to get this moving forward. So we'll bring it on the 6th and begin the public comment on that time, close the public comment on the 20th at that time when it would be approved. So we do have to apply for those funds, and if HUD doesn't like our plan or they have comments about it, they'll come back to us. We have opportunities to change it, to make changes in it after we've submitted it, but it must be submitted by December 1st.
Okay, Councilmember Richens? Oh, okay.
The planning and administration of the program, we are allowed up to 10% for administration. Any nonprofits that would apply for that would also apply to them if they were awarded funds. 10% of the amount would go towards administration. There's no matching requirements in this program. There are 5 eligible uses for the funds. And a lot of the regulations go back to the CDBG regulations. However, there's just a few things that are different than that, which we'll explain to any partners that we have. The 5 eligible uses, purchase and rehabilitate homes for sale, rental, or redevelopment, can demolish blighted structures, redevelop demolished and vacant properties, establish land banks for homes foreclosed upon, and establish financing mechanisms to be used on the NSP properties.
Councilmember Higgins?
Can you explain what a land bank is?
Basically, it's when you would have a property that's foreclosed on, and the house maybe, the home may not be, you know, in any condition to rehab. You might just want to demolish that home, so you would end up with a piece of land. It's accumulation of land.
And how's
just,
it?
I'm sorry, you just hold on to that until there was a better use better that came use along.
So how's that different from number 2, demolished blighted structures? Is it the same thing?
Yeah, the money can be used for the actual demolition. Maybe that's what it's saying there, is that you can use it to demolish it and then also to purchase.
And then number 4 is and hang on to.
Right.
Okay.
And Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, sometimes we look at, it could be a cluster of land. Land banking could be you go in for several properties and you hold on to it for a better, bigger use in a particular area, so you're banking a number of properties for that.
Councilman Richens?
I kind of in answer to your question too, land banks sometimes are a technique used for affordable housing as well. So you can hold a piece of property, the nonprofit can own the property on the bottom, and then you can build a house on top, and then the affordability component is somebody purchases and lives in the house, but they don't own the land. The land bank owns the land. So you can create a mechanism that you can create affordable housing in a community that way.
However, HUD is not really looking for people to land bank a lot of land. They want to put homes and properties back into service. That's the point of the NSP program, is not to hang on to a lot of land, but we may need to do that for a project.
And Mayor, one more question.
Yeah,
Councilor. And the number 3, the redevelop, demolish, or vacant properties, what are some examples of what you could do there?
You could go in, and if you purchased a foreclosed home, then you could do whatever you want to it to get it sold or for rental properties.
You can wipe it out. Could you put in a community center, a park? That's what it says. Or redevelop vacant properties. What things can we do on a vacant property?
We can't pay for like a park.
Housing related.
Housing related, yes.
Yeah, I kind of read some stuff. I thought we might be able to do something like that if it helps revitalize the neighborhood again.
You can do public facilities.
So you could put in a park in that area.
Yeah.
Or a local community center or something that, again, will stabilize the neighborhood.
Yes.
That doesn't go back into, like, property, rental, homes, that kind of thing.
Right.
Okay.
But let me clarify, though. There's not funds here to do the operations of those facilities.
No, no.
Sure.
Of course not.
No.
Right.
Yeah, I don't create an expectation of building parks and community facilities. They're going to require some type of operational expectation, either from CDBG or from the city's general fund. That's not what this what we're expecting from the program. I think the concern we have is we need to find a targeted strategy to go in and make a difference in a specific area where we can stabilize the community. And frankly, I think the struggle we have is this is an opportunity to kind of, if you would, go in, work on the demo, you know, the function of the buildings, whether it's through rehab, demolition, even trying to get it back in a productive possession so that it can be inhabited and stabilized. The greatest concern we have, and I think this is the concern we have, I've had when you do all these programs, even our home programs that we do today, is 5 years from now, what's it going to look like? You know, we can go in, we can make all these investments, we can rehab a home, we can stabilize it for today, and we get a new tenant, new homeowner in there. Is what my challenge of staff is, we've got to figure out the long-term stability. How do you stay involved and make sure that those homes and that neighborhood continue in the state that we've hopefully will, you know, invest in and maintain that over a long period of time? And I think that's going to be our challenge. It's a challenge for all HUD programs because they are sometimes converted, turn it over, and, you know, then you see 5 years later some of these homes begin to deteriorate again. So that's a big challenge we're going to have.
But couldn't the discussion go on these vacant properties? I'm just going to throw some out, like a youth center, like some, like say one of these areas really there's a need for to keep, that's most of the calls are coming from youth problems. So we actually do, I mean, a youth center might benefit, and then we as a city have to say, yes, those funds can build this. We're going to have to figure out how we're going to staff something like that, because that's the heart of the problem in this area.
I mean, that's
a discussion we could continue to have.
I would agree. I would just suggest, and in the time when we'll be cutting back programs, I think it's be very difficult to, I don't want to create an expectation of creating facilities that are going to then have an ongoing operation unless the council is willing to make those adjustments somewhere else throughout. So I guess it could be possible.
Well, I think it creates a very basic policy decision. I mean, $9.6 million sounds like a lot of money until you start doing some big project. All of a sudden, that disappears real fast. Mm-hmm. And if it disappears real fast, then we also don't have money to operate, or we have to take from one to the other, and we've just been eliminating some youth program. It's a policy I think we need to weigh very carefully as to whether we want to put this into homes or put it into something else. Vice Mayor and then Councilmember Higgins.
Just a perfect example of that is Washington Park. We have the facility in a very needed area, but yet we do not have the funds to operate it, to staff it.
Just to follow up, I mean, when we look at the incident density report, I mean, there's money involved in this incident density report, right? Every time, I mean, how many did, left the glasses at home. There's like 3,000, almost 6,000 calls for service. Is that what that would be? I mean, don't we somewhere in life look at that and say, hey, we're going to offset the fact that we're keeping 6,000 police officers somewhere else in the city? And, you know, you see where I'm going with that as what will it cost to actually do something in that area? I know that's not how the budget works, but maybe we can think that way. I think we should be thinking a different way. Perhaps when we look at these kind of things, maybe we need to change the way we look at money.
I don't think anyone's disagreeing with you.
Right. I know.
Because I believe that that's correct. You know, if we invest, and we'd love to invest in our kids because we either pay the money now or we found out we pay it later,
right,
either through public safety or through, you know, remediation program, human remediation type of things, prison, other types of things. I think the question we have here is that we have $9.6 million that is available to us, and we have a very short time frame to look at what we're doing. And this council needs to decide very quickly on a policy level whether we're going to use that on a general basis for houses. The idea being that, and you could argue both ways, that even if you have a youth center or something like that, does the fact that you have dilapidated houses, does that offset that? I mean, you could argue both ways. Or if you improve the housing stock and create stabilized neighborhood through the types of buildings and getting rid of the very blighted areas, can that create the kind of same effect as putting in some other program? That's how I see it. It's just how are we going to use this $9.6 million and get the biggest bang for the buck? And I agree with you that that's you can debate that. I think the challenge we have is we got about 10 minutes to make, literally to make that decision. Councilmember Richens.
I think Ray framed it well at the beginning when he brought this these maps in, and you look at some of them, and you see we have an opportunity here with a very limited amount of funds, $9.6 million, to take care of some properties that may have crime problems, code problems, be vacant, and or in foreclosure all at the same time. And how many homes do you think we could do with $9.6 million?
Well, we can
do you have a range?
Well, I know that, like, just take $7 million, you can do about 37.
37 homes for seven. So we're not talking a huge number of homes. That's why I think we're on the right track looking at 85204 in clustering these dollars in as close to one place as we can and see. And because the whole point is a neighborhood stabilization, we may have an opportunity to stabilize a large chunk of this this neighborhood, which clearly is having struggles.
So what you're saying is if we have 37 houses, if we checkerboard that, we'll have 37 nice rebuilt houses. The effect might be minimal because we end up diluting the 9.6 million, the 37 houses across a wide area. And so what we're looking at is potentially taking, if you took those 37 houses and put them onto two blocks or three blocks and concentrated on that core area, then you have an infusion of new houses, you get rid of the blighted, and you have the potential of creating true change in the neighborhood. Is that the thought process that you're following?
That's correct. In some cases, it might be also, lowering the density of a neighborhood by
a
poor house that you might just purchase it, demo it, and, you might just replace
it. For example, it seems like if you look in there, my guess is there would be a lot of fourplexes and triplexes and clusters of those, and those tend to be challenged. Those, especially if we look in the Reed Park area, it developed, but there's a lot of little fourplexes, sixplexes, that types of things. And what you're saying is that what you would do is maybe take those, if those are being challenged, demo those, and in lieu of fourplexes, you build two or three single-family detached,
yes,
which tend to be more stable.
Yes.
Then okay.
Correct.
Councilmember
Richards. Stabilizing.
So you're saying that we can acquire fourplexes, multifamily with this program,
right?
And we could actually demolish some of our blighted fourplexes
if they're abandoned or foreclosed.
Abandoned or foreclosed. Yeah.
Councilmember Finter.
Thank you. I think that's where we really need to go. Those of us that know about Crack Alley and those fourplexes. Reed Park area that we border up to. I think everybody knows what the animal is. When I look at, we were doing a Building Stronger Neighborhoods in Gilbert and Broadway area. Single family homes, they're owned by major bank building or bank operations. I won't say any of the names, but they're allowed to deteriorate. They aren't being cared for, so it causes us a challenge. But those fourplexes and duplexes and things, I think, are where the root crime problem is too. So I would hope that we would move towards that area. So thanks.
Thank you.
Mr. Brady?
And I think, Mayor, one of the things we want to talk with our nonprofits about and our community partners is this is one tool we're bringing to the table, and maybe going to Councilmember Higgins' issue is, what if is there a way we can leverage other dollars that are out there that may be related more to services and programs? If we can provide the land, if we can provide the facilities, then maybe there's a way to work to leverage that. And one of the reasons we're attracted to this area is that it's already been identified as an area of need, of concern. The city already has a significant amount of focused efforts going on here from PD, from our action team, from co-compliance, fire department, and we know in our own community outside of the city, there's also many other partners who are focusing their resources here. So part of what we want to do, too, is try to go in concert to figure out how we can leverage together these activities so we're not just out there acquiring properties without understanding the context of what somebody else may be looking at to bring a program or a service that we could work together to leverage more than what we have today.
Vice Mayor?
And also talking to what you mentioned earlier about what about 5-10 years down the road. And we do have those out there. I mean, we could acquire properties that need to be raised, and we could provide that property to someone like Habitat, who comes in building homes, but also training people about how to do their finances. There's the component of training people how to maintain that stuff.
I agree, Vice Mayor. I think even where I was going at is my experience in a variety of different markets is that's a good first step.
Yeah.
Sometimes there needs to be a property management element that maybe continues beyond that. And that's what I've challenged the staff to try to figure out. How do we create this long-term sustainability? And I don't know if this program itself, these dollars are going to actually provide for that. I really want to see what can we do. I understand how important it is to train the owners and educate them about home ownership and what it means, but I think we need the follow-up. We need the oversight to make sure that happens in the long term.
And our best bet is owner-occupied in the long term.
That's a good start.
Okay.
Okay. As with any program, there are some uses that are ineligible. And just to name three of those, we can't do any foreclosure prevention, unfortunately. We can't demolish any non-blighted structures or purchase properties that are not abandoned or foreclosed. So if there's just some building sitting over there we don't like, we can't get rid of that. Also, under our national objectives, the funds... all funds must be used to benefit individuals at or below 120% of median income, and not less than 25% of the funds have to go to families under 50% of the area median income.
Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you. And to that point, with that additional requirement, it seems to me that there could be opportunities to work with organizations that serve individuals with special needs, because again, very often they're the ones that are in that. In the income category, and I think that's an example perhaps of the type of leveraging that we may be able to do again as another anchor part of a neighborhood that we focus on.
Yes, thank you.
So in pure numbers, we're talking $2 to $2.5 million that
right.
About $2.3 million has to be allocated to that. Councilmember Richens?
Can you give those numbers? A lot of people don't understand what 120%
okay.
of the median
if you go,
is.
We go to the next slide. We give an example there. 120% of median income for a family of four is $77,050.
Is that for Mesa?
Excuse me?
That is for Mesa.
Mesa, yes.
Okay.
Yes, so that's just an example. I can get you the complete 1 to 8 person families. That
Right.
I can get you that if you'd like that.
And
but that's
50% would be what?
And that's the next slide. That's our Section 8 income guidelines is 50%, and a family of four is $32,100.
And that income amount slides up and down depending on how few family members or how many family
Correct.
Members.
Correct. It'd be
has.
Less for one person, and an 8 family household would be more.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Already covered this. The principal ways, of course, to would be through rental housing, one of the ones, new construction or conversion, acquisition, and acquisition rehab. Okay, the last slide talks about that within 4 years, everything has to be pretty much done. It can be a revolving fund. Any program income we receive off the property has to be used first, so that goes back in our pot in the 4 years.
Let's talk about that. So we buy a house out of foreclosure, we rehab it, we then sell it to an owner, that goes back in the fund and can and must be reused.
Right. Correct.
Okay.
First, before the
First.
New money, before any additional of our $9 million.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so July 30th, 2013, they're listing as the end date for the program, but things could come back in after that if homes were sold or anything, but. Okay.
Mayor, before we close, I just want to mention and one thing that Chris mentioned a little earlier is we do have partners working with us in the 85204 area, and one of those partners is a safe and stable task force, which is ran by the United Way. And today we have Carol McCormick here, who would like to say a few words about this program.
While Carol is walking up, I think Councilmember Kavanaugh had a comment.
I had another question, too.
Just to comment on the process, because we're at such a late date, I think what we're doing here, though, is we're creating a great burden on our potential community partners to respond in such a very short period of time, and that is a concern that I have, because I know this program has been I mean, communities across the country have been aware of this for quite a long time, since early this year. And so I just, I hope that the RFP process that we have will not be overly burdensome, because it really is going to require people who want to bid to probably work all weekend to try to figure out a way to respond and come back to us. And so I think that I just have a concern that we're doing this now, and I'm hoping that our community partners will step up and work with us on it, and that we will with them. But I think we have created some challenges for our partners to be able to do a turnaround in such a quick time.
And let me ask you something. How specific do these RFPs need to be? I mean,
it will basically say, what do you want to do, and how much money do you want?
Okay, what's your we don't capacity? Have to say 123 no, East Main Street.
Oh, no.
Okay,
no.
All right.
No,
Mayor,
no.
Mayor, I think our biggest challenge for the nonprofits is really we want to make sure that someone that comes in as a partner can perform.
Gotcha.
Has capacity, has some experience. And frankly, our biggest concern really is, I mean, if you think about it today, under our home programs, the largest allocation that we typically do on an annual basis, what did we say, $2 million? That sound about right?
For the, our nonprofits?
Yeah, nonprofits.
About 400,000.
400,000. Oh, that's the total.
That's,
sorry.
Yeah.
400,000. So really, our concern is not, we want all our partners to participate. It's the really is the question's going to be is them demonstrating to us their capacity to take on four or five times more than they've done in the past. And so I think we're going to rely upon the fact that we have experience with a lot of these partners, so that's huge right there for us. It's really for them to identify, and we're going to identify the program we're focused on. Really, we just want to know what can they bring to the table as far as the capacity to perform within even the guidelines we've been here. Not we're interested in these five or six different properties. We'll work through that within the strategy the council has, and we'll probably, you know, designate areas or whatever for them to work on. But we really, what we're looking for is come to us and say, you've got the capacity right now, or at least as this program ramps up, to perform, to spend the money. Because if we don't spend the money goes back to the feds. That's the key.
Councilmember Higgins?
Ray, on page 11, or Carolyn, the question, 10% of planning and administration, 10% applies to the grant as a whole. That just means 10% of the $9.6 million, not so-and-so gets $1 million and they get 10% out of that for...
They would get their 10% of the administration that out of the funds that they're awarded.
So it's at
up
a
to
cap.
10%.
Up to 10% of the whole number.
Right. It's not a given that 10% is the number we're going to use necessarily.
Right. Correct.
It's up to 10%, because if we decide to go 5% or 4% or 0%,
right.
We can define that. It's that HUD allows up to 10%.
Correct.
I'd like to make sure that we understand that that's not an entitlement. That
right.
That's
absolutely.
That's a limit.
And I also wanted to mention that we did just get the regulation September 29th, and staff has been working.
Well, we just got the dollar
long
amount.
Out. And the regulations.
Time, yeah. So.
And the regulations of what, I mean, there was a lot of talk out there before that, but there was nothing concrete. And actually, we talked about it for a couple months before, and when we got the final regulations, it was different. So what we thought we were going to be able to do at that time when we did get the final regulations.
So they spent their sweet time getting the stuff to us, and then...
Right.
Gave
we
us
haven't,
equal amount of time, right?
We've been working hard to try to get this pulled together also.
Councilman Richens?
Just to give some perspective to this council, I think it would be helpful for us to understand how are other communities applying these funds? Have we surveyed Phoenix or Glendale or some of the other award communities about what process they're using, what partnerships they're using, and how they're going about doing these things?
We, as a matter of fact, this afternoon I'm going to a meeting, a regional meeting, to discuss that with some of the other partners, because we want to talk about how the funds are being used, and we are going to do that. There has been some preliminary discussion, but there has not been any specific discussion that we've had. We met with quite a few partners when we went to the training last Friday in L.A., and even then they didn't have any really specific plans, and we're hoping to get a little more of what they're doing today when we meet this afternoon.
Okay. It's the essence of government to steal other people's good ideas. So if there's other communities that have found creative ways to do this, let's make sure that we incorporate it into what we're attempting.
Ms. McCormack.
Thank you, Mayor and council members and staff. I appreciate the opportunity to speak here today. I just want to reiterate that as we look at what the staff has brought to you, We think their ideas and their methodology of looking at this is right on target. We also have mapping that we use within our office. Our maps look a little bit different, but in the end, the statistics are the same, and the conclusion has been the same, which is where the area of most need is in this community. One of the things I would urge you as you go forward in the next few weeks, you will get all kinds of people who will come up to you saying either I want it in the district that you serve or I want it for a specific constituency and can you move some money over here or over there. And I would just urge you to look at the purpose of this grant, which is the stabilization of a neighborhood. And exactly as you had mentioned, Alex, I think that that's extremely important to look at your crime, your issues of multifamily, your issues of very blighted buildings, and make those choices first and foremost as you work forward to this. And sometimes that can be difficult because you will have pillars of this community who have great ideas for great purpose, but they don't really meet what this grant is. The other thing, Chris, Mr. Brady, you were exactly right in the fact that we don't have to have the exact addresses. We don't have to have a plan so detailed that we know what each agency will have and what each agency will do. We need to have a plan that says we have a methodology of going forward. It is an appropriate methodology. We have the right partners at the table, and we have the capacity to do it. And I think staff is well on their way to that. And we at United Way would offer any services that we can have in terms of research or bringing additional people to the table. And I just wanted to reiterate that to you. I'm very pleased with the discussion this morning. I think it's going in a really positive direction, and I appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Carol.
Okay, Mayor, Mayor and Council, the direction we really need today, we have an 11 o'clock meeting with our partners, is that targeted focus area. What staff is proposing today is the area of west of Lindsay Road, but with a priority focus in 85204, because that needs to be part of our application process.
Well, I think, have I heard a second part that we really want to try and focus on a specific, even within that area, exactly. That we want to focus on a specific neighborhood, yeah. Rather than a cluster or a checkerboard throughout that, because even west of Lindsay is a pretty big area.
Yeah, that's correct. And so, our thoughts are is that after we hopefully do get our allocation, is that we would spearhead a discussion with our stakeholders, nonprofits, and other community partners like the United Way to even drill down further into particular neighborhoods where there really is that high area of foreclosure, and that would come after.
All right, let me ask the council, the sense of the council, are we everyone okay with that approach? Target a specific area, define a specific area, and within that area target a narrowed down focused area to try and create a stabilization in a neighborhood. Is that a consensus?
That looks like Gilbert and Broadway is ground zero here.
and Mayor, I think we can come back. We just want to put that come back. Broad I think, in the application. We'll come right. back to the specifics over
but
time.
But if there's no objections, we'll go ahead and give you that that confirmation that I think you're headed in the right direction, and we'll look for some more specifics as far as areas or however you want to approach that.
Thank you.
Okay?
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Next item on the agenda is acknowledge receipts of minutes in various boards and committees. Motion by Councilmember Summer, second by the Vice Mayor. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Item number six, here are reports on meetings and conferences attended. Councilmember Higgins?
I just want, before he leaves, did Charles leave already? I want to acknowledge Charles DeWitt's 14 years of service with the City of Mesa.
Mr. DeWitt.
He's retiring, just in case we didn't know. And I also, I really have arrived in the world. I have someone shadowing me today. Lynn Van Gold from the Mesa Leadership Program is shadowing today. I just wanted to introduce her and welcome to the day. There she is. Thanks.
Did she keep up?
That's right.
I find out.
Councilmember Cassie, very broad shadow. So. Dick. No. I'm gonna quit digging.
That hole's
way too deep. I'm not gonna go there. Okay. Next item. Any other reports, Vice Mayor?
I just want to mention, yesterday at our Metro Board Rail meeting, we went ahead and approved that the opening time we have the opening celebration starting December 27th. And for the public to ride, and we extended that through the end of the year, so not just the weekend, 27th, 28th, but we will extend free ridership through December 31st so that we get people more familiar with light rail. So they'll make those plans to get acquainted with, and maybe after the big rush of the weekend, the 27th, 28th, you could go out and take a ride across town on the rail for free just to get acquainted with it.
Does that go all the way to midnight for, you know,
no.
New Year's revelers or anything like that?
Okay, Councilmember Summers?
Very successful pancake breakfast in District 6, thanks to all the folks who attended and the city employees who came out and spent their time in connecting with the folks in my neighborhood and answering a lot of questions. That place was packed. Mayor and Vice Mayor also attended. Did you get pancakes?
Cause I did.
I didn't. I never do. But it was a tremendously successful event.
Great. Councilmember Higgins?
One more announcement for MACFest. Again, MACFest runs every Saturday from 10 to 4, and there were even more exhibitors this past week than there were last, and lots of people downtown. Many new restaurants. I've tried a couple this weekend. It was very fun. So come on down, spend your money in Mesa at MACFest.
Great. Vice Mayor.
Just added to that, this coming Saturday, you'll have MACFest, you'll have the Old West Days, and you'll have a fundraiser down there. So it's going to be a lot more available. So awesome. Come downtown on Saturday.
Mr. Brady, upcoming meetings.
And when you're done with that, we have getting Arizona involved in neighborhoods. So it's going to be an active weekend, and the council members will be out visiting the different neighborhoods that are hosting their GAIN event. Also want to remind the council that we have on October 23rd, next Thursday, later in the afternoon, we'll have a ribbon cutting for the crime lab. And also the following Saturday of the 25th is our City Hall at the Mall, which will be at Superstition Springs from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Crocker, any requests to speak from citizens?
No requests, Mayor.
Okay, there being none, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Moved by Councilmember Summers, second by the Vice Mayor. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? We are adjourned. Thank you.